Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Filling up right behind the Bills bench right now with their flags and their hey, 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 hey. Hey, 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 hey. Hey, hey. Let's go Buffalo chant.
On WGR Sports Radio 550. Let's go Buffalo.
The Bills make me wanna shout. The Bills make me wanna. And microphone goes on. Works a lot better when you turn the mic on. If you don't turn the mic on, they really can't hear you, Howard, you dummy. Sal joining us on the Western Hotline. Apparently the button's not big enough or bright enough for me to know that it's on or not. Sal joining us on the Western Hotline, brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it is the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? Good morning, Mr. Capaccio. How are you?
Good morning. I have the same problem. I have this, because of where I'm doing the show, I have a on-off switch on my mic that I want to make sure like there's no any noise in the background. I turn off. And then every once in a while,
You forget.
I'll forget to turn it back on to talk. And I'm like, oh, wait, I got to turn that on to talk to you guys.
No, I don't forget. I push the button, and apparently I just don't push it the right way. And I think it's on, and I start talking, and I realize, hey, I don't hear myself in my headphones. No, it's just me being just me. Hey, I'm not being a jerk. I was sad to hear about Stanton going on the IL. The poor guy can't stay healthy. You know, I'm not a fan of the Yankees, but I'm a fan of him, even though he used to destroy the Mets. So I just thought I'd pass that over to you. I bet Yankee fans
are frustrated.
Well, I
think you know I was never a fan of the acquisition.
Yeah,
the
and it hasn't with the
I said that
it hasn't worked out. Yeah, I know.
No, I just didn't think they ever needed to do that. And you know, I'm not like it's great if he hits home runs. All right, yay! I mean, the guy hits for the team that I root for. But
yeah,
you know, I just was never a fan of the acquisition. And what the contract that went along with it and things like that. But look, they're still a really good team. Yesterday was a tough loss for the Yankees. I watched that game. I mean, Paxton was dealing 6 innings, 1 hit, 3-0, and all of a sudden, boom, boom, couple home runs, and then they lose it in the ninth. It was just that was a tough loss. The Rays are good,
still good. They're still
the
good.
Rays are good.
Like the Rays were good, but the Rays are funny, Sal. Like the Rays were good last year, but when they're good, you don't know the Rays are good. Like they're just
right.
They're never. Then granted, I'm more of a National League fan than an American League fan, but they're just never on the baseball radar. Even when they're good, nobody talks about them.
No, I know. I mean, you're right. They just don't resonate like that.
No.
But they have players, and they have a very diverse type of lineup. They have good pitching. So, yeah, they're going to be there till the end no matter what.
Oh, yeah, that's the team you worry about. I mean, Toronto's got some good up-and-coming players. I know Baltimore got off to a big start, and then they kind of tailed off. And the Red Sox have no pitching. The team you should worry about is in your division is Tampa, no question about it. Okay, let's talk football. Let's talk Bills. Before we get into some specifics, what happens this week? Okay, they're moving into another phase this week, correct?
Well, kind of, sort of, yeah. Actually, this week, you're right. In fact, I think it is actually today or tomorrow. Actually, would be the next time that would happen, and basically it becomes phase two. Now you can actually start to do a little bit more when it comes to football stuff, you know, and have a few less restrictions as far as you know how much you can use a football, how much you can be on the field. And things like that. It's actually, here it is. It's the 12th thing. I want to get the actual date. That's the
Wednesday.
12th. So that would be on Wednesday. So now, starting on Wednesday, they are subject to a maximum of 3.5 hours on the field. The first time they're on there, though, to do this, they're only allowed 90 minutes. And then they can ramp up 15 minutes extra every day until they get to 120 minutes, basically. The remainder of that time has to be walkthroughs. So the actual practice time can only last up to 2 hours once they get to their maximum. And then after that, there's an hour and a half for walkthroughs, basically. helmets approved, protective shirts are permitted, stuff like that. They're not hitting yet, mm-hmm. anything like that. Non-padded practices, basically.
Right.
And then they're going to have an off day on the 15th. They'll have one more practice like that on the 16th, and then the 17th they can start mm-hmm. having, you know, more padded practices, basically. So yeah, so the next couple of days are still phase one, if you will, calling it the acclimation period. On Wednesday, they get to what they call the gradual ramp-up period, which essentially is phase two in a normal early offseason.
How do you think this is all going to be handled by the players? I think it was Mitch Morse was asked this yesterday, on or whichever day it was that he had a Zoom call, about the ramp-up. And because, again, this is not a normal summer after what was not a normal off season, and all of a sudden, so you show up, you get into phase two, you put pads on the 17th, and then 4 weeks later, you're playing games with no preseason games. How do you think the players will handle this whole ramp up thing and be in terms of their preparation for the year?
I think every player is different as far as where they were coming in already, you know, where their physical conditioning was, where they were with playbooks, things like that. And I think this goes back to what we've talked about a lot, Howard, which is, you know, the Bills are in a much better position than most teams. This is, you know, a team that has a lot of guys returning. They can hit the ground running on the playbook. They're not learning a new system. They're not installing a new system. They're kind of building off it. Yeah, there's going to have to be some, you know, going back and relearning, repetition type of thing. There's no doubt about that. But there's two parts of it. There's a physical and there's a mental. And, you know, I think even Mitch Morse said, you know, that you know, you still have to get that back going again. But once you do, once you're out there, you know, you're back in the swing of things, and you hit the ground going like you normally would. It might take a little while. But I also think, you know, the physical part of it, it depends on how guys treated their bodies in the offseason and, you know, if they were doing the right thing. Look, I think it really helps to have a coach like Sean McDermott in this situation. He, as you know, does not leave anything desired. You know, he uncovers every detail, plans for almost everything. And if there's something he didn't plan for, then by gosh, he's going to go back and he's going to do whatever he can to make sure he turns that over and fixes that, or, you know, makes it right or gets him right in the spot they need to. So I would think that even before these guys got to Buffalo, started camp, you know, a couple of weeks ago, last week on the field, whatever it is, I would think that they're all in a pretty good spot, both physically and mentally, if they were all following the actual protocols and guidelines that their head coach and their position coaches laid out for them.
It's funny, Sal. It's interesting. One of my neighbors and I had that exact same chat about Sean McDermott. I mean, it's mm-hmm. on the one hand, you look at it and go, nobody knows. I mean, the next day, the next hour could present a new challenge that you just can't anticipate. So you can only prepare so much. But then I'm with you. Like, this guy is so detail-oriented to the point where, I mean, I thought I was thorough. This guy blows everybody out of the water. And I thought, you know, I did think, I don't know if it translates to wins. I'm not saying he's the only coach in the NFL who's this detail-oriented, but at a time like this, where there are so many things that you have to take into account for preparing in a pandemic, it's funny that you brought that up. I thought, you know what? If there is a guy that could be up to the challenge, he doesn't seem to ever miss a beat on anything that you got to think about.
No, that's right. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the Patriots, too, and, you know, their turnover, and they're going to take a drop. But, you know, having a guy like Belichick, obviously, it's not just that he's a great coach. He's very similar. You know, he thinks about every detail. He takes care of all those little things. You know, I think the Patriots will be a better team than a lot of teams because of this, despite the losses on their roster, right? I would think, my guess would be a team like the Jets, a team that has a head coach that a lot of people don't think is necessarily as buttoned up or as detail-oriented, and Adam Gase might be playing catch-up compared to teams. There's going to be all different levels of that going around. It does not guarantee success. It doesn't guarantee failure, no matter what, but I think you certainly want to be put in a certain position to make sure you have the best chance for success. You know, even when Sean McDermott talked to us, what, last week it was, when he said, look, there's no preseason. So he's had to reach out to, he went and reached out to some college coaches, including mm-hmm. his former college coach. Like, how do you prepare for a season where the first time you're against live competition is in a real game? You know, you don't get preseason in college. You know, so he's trying to structure and plan his practices, his meetings, a day-to-day life around all that amid everything else that's going on in the pandemic and, you know, having to plan for guys in and out of the roster. Look what just happened with yesterday. They activated Duke Williams. Mm-hmm. So the Bills have nobody left on the reserve COVID list, which is great, obviously. And the corresponding move is they release Akeem King, who probably didn't have time for a plate of wings here in Buffalo. I mean, you know, this is what life is right now, though. Guys are going to have to come in and out. Now, I know that that happens anyway in the NFL sometimes, but this is what we're dealing with, which is, boom, a guy tests positive, a guy's around somebody, he's got to go on a list, bring somebody in. Well, 3 days later, okay, he's cleared, get that guy out of here. Like, this is what personnel life is going to be like in the NFL this year.
Sal with us on our Wester hotline. If you want to, if you had a Bills question for Sal or a comment or opinion you want to share, phone lines are open. Excuse me, 803-0550 or 888-550-2550. I did want to ask you a little bit about some of the Zoom calls. So Dawson Knox was one of the guys who spoke to the media over the weekend. And not surprisingly, I don't think anybody would be surprised to hear that drops was a question that came up, a topic that came up a few times on the call. What did he have to say about looking back on year one?
I really like the way he approached it and the answer he gave. You know, a lot of times you're going to get the, yeah, you know, too many times, made too many mistakes. I have to get better at that. And that's true. You know, you're going to get a lot of that. But he was very specific. Mm-hmm. And I think he really did a good job of identifying his own shortcoming here, which he said when he went back and looked at his drops, they were mostly of the easier catch variety when he thought he had the ball secure and he tried to turn upfield. He said there's even like one photo he has that he sees his eyes turning upfield before he's got the ball secure, you know, because he's trying to make a move. He sees someone coming. And I think that's right. Now, look, you know, I've gone back and watched a lot of these games. I'm, you know, going through my Bills 2019 rewind series. And I will tell you, Howard, I agree with that. Every time it seemed like he had a drop, it was, boy, like, I mean, there was one that was a little tougher catch, but most of them were like, wow, how did he drop that? And then he came up with a lot of tougher catches, actually. Like, wow, how did he hang on to that one?
That's why the drops are so confusing or frustrating, because you could see he's got a really good pair of hands.
But I think, you know, there's two parts of a guy who switches positions from quarterback to tight end that we have to talk about here, which is partly playing into this. Number one, obviously, he just did not have the reps at tight end in college, like most guys do coming out of college. Mm-hmm. He was a converted quarterback. He went to Ole Miss as a quarterback, backed up Chad Kelly, actually, for a little while. He was converted to tight end. They didn't even throw to the tight end that much because it's around the offense, basically. Just didn't get a lot of reps. But the other part of it is, and I think this is something that once he said it, you know, it's like, yeah, that's right. You know, that makes sense. When you switch positions like that and you're going to from a quarterback to a tight end, you have to learn the differences in space and people coming at you and the timing and things like that. And I think that's something that he has to still get used to, especially at the NFL level. It's one thing at the college level. The game's even that much faster at the NFL level. But I think where he needs to learn that is the reason why he's tucking the ball before he's turning upfield is I don't think he's quite understanding yet the space he has necessarily, and trying to figure that out. And that's going to go with more repetition. That's going to come with more time catching the ball in space and having guys around him and things like that. You know, he didn't do a lot of that in college. So I think that makes a lot of sense. And I was really happy to hear that, but at the same time intrigued that he said that, because he got pretty specific on it. He said he's had a jugs machine all offseason, wherever he was, at his home or whatever, working with that to work on that.
I thought one of the other interesting things he brought up was when he was asked about what he'd like to be better at in year two, and he talked about being an overall tight end. Like he brought up blocking and you know, being on the field every play, not just being a guy who's out there because they know he can catch the ball and help the passing game, but he can't really block, so we got to get him off the field. And I thought that was, for, you know, for a young player, I don't know, maybe the guys, I mean, it's not the most exciting part of the business, blocking, but I thought that was pretty good for him to point that out, that he wants to be able to contribute every play and not be told, okay, you're coming off and Lee Smith or whoever is going on.
I thought he was okay at blocking last year. There were times where he could have done better. There's no doubt. I think he the one that missed the block in the playoff game.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. He let the guy go by him. And again, you know, sometimes that comes with understanding space and time, and, you know, understanding where your angles are. And this is not a guy that's played this position very long. He's out in space. He sees a guy coming, and that guy, you know, that linebacker coming, whoever it is, you know, that guy understands where he's going, how he needs to get there. And Dawson needs to be a little quicker recognizing that, understanding that angle. There were other times where I tell you that he had some phenomenal blocks on the edge. I think one I remember watching where he sprung Devin Singletary. I'm like, oh, man, that was a great block. And that, or even Josh, maybe it was on a sweep. So he can do it. We all know, you know, he's not afraid to be physical. It's not that at all. I mean, he's got that stiff arm. He's, you know, he'll run over guys. You know, he's not afraid to do that. I think it's really kind of understanding. Once he understands where he is, his leverage, all that kind of stuff, you know, he's fine at it. But sure, I mean, just more reps, understanding all that stuff. So that'd be great. You know, there are a lot of guys in the NFL now who come into the league at tight end, and they're just pass catchers. And if that's what the team wants, that's fine. I remember when Armando Salguero was on with Show Up and the Bulldog, I think a few weeks ago, and Mike asked him about Mike Gesicki. And he basically said the guy can't block, but he's great at catching the ball. Like, that's what they want him to do. I think Dawson Knox, you know, they want him to be on the field more often. Yeah, they do have Lee Smith there. But eventually, you know, you want to have a guy that you don't have to keep shuttling in and out. You want to have a guy that you can do multiple things with, and that includes blocking and catching and running routes and all that stuff.
The I did want to ask you, we'll get to your article about linebackers at our website, but I wanted to bring up, both Mitch Morse and Brian Winters did calls as well, and so I can tie this into one question. What will it all be like in terms of chemistry? We've talked about continuity and all these pieces coming back, and we had looked at the offensive line and said, probably all five starters back, assuming Ford wins the right tackle job. Now you take Feliciano out of the mix. So you bring a new guy in here in August. What will that dynamic be like as Morse and Winters, who have to work next to each other, try and get to know each other in a short amount of time?
Well, this goes back to something we've talked about and I've brought up to you a few times, which is you're gonna have an advantage and you're gonna try and get more veterans in situations like this, right? You need guys who understand football. You need guys who understand the lingo, even if it's a different system. And that's really kind of what they both touched on. You know, Brian Winters basically said it's just basically correlating what you know, a terminology, something like that from your other system. You know, if you can relate to it as quick as possible, then boom, you're off and running. Look, these guys are professionals. They're going to work really hard to be able to do that. And Mitch Morse has been in this league a while. Brian Winters has been in this league a while. I don't think that transition is going to be as difficult as a lot of people think, especially considering you do have four returning offensive linemen. You're just really plugging one guy in. This is not a situation, even like last year, where the Bills basically had four different offensive linemen, new guys that all had to kind of mesh together. So I don't think it's going to be that difficult for them. There might be a time here, a time there, where we watch the first game, the first two games, and go, oh, like Mitch or Brian Winters, they had a miscommunication, right? Mm-hmm. Or Cody Ford, right? There was a miscommunication. Sure, that can absolutely happen. But I don't think it's going to be a problem, Howard. I think because he's a veteran, he's been around, he understands, you know, football and terminology, they'll be able to pick that up pretty quick.
Yeah, because I thought it was interesting. He said plays are plays. A playbook is a playbook. It's the same concept.
That's right.
It's just what they call it is a little bit different. The other thing,
you know what? And even if, and you know what, that's a huddle for too. If you're in a huddle, and if you're not going like super hurry up, a lot of times you could be in a huddle and a play could be called. And if you have a question, you just turn to Mitch Morse and go,
yeah, right.
Hey, do I have the three technique? you know what I mean?
What are we doing here?
All right, boom. That's all.
I thought, I didn't realize. So he said also he has family here and his parents lived in Western New York at one point.
Amazing. I had no idea either. Nobody really, we didn't realize this until we're talking with him. He said that his aunt and uncle lived, I couldn't remember what he said, in East Aurora.
Yeah.
And then his mom lived here for 8 years. His mom and dad, they used to walk two games, Bills games.
It's amazing.
I'm like, okay, like, were they Bills fans? Like, they lived here for 8 years. And then, you know, the Zoom call ended. We didn't get a chance. And, you know, I'll ask him at some point, like, what years were those? Were did they come and watch him play?
Yeah.
Or was this, like, well before that? I mean, interesting. He said, I like the fact that he said he was eager to strap it up against his former team when he was asked about
week one.
He, you know.
Yeah.
He didn't say he had any hard feelings, but you know, he said that you never know in this league when that happens. But he said, yeah, he's eager to strap it up against them.
I honestly thought you could kind of hear it in his voice. Like he knew that the Jets were on the schedule in week one. So, I'm not going to have time to get into it in depth, but you're going through position by position, a nice breakdown. You're on the defensive side of things now. Linebackers are up. You can read all these articles, by the way, that Sal's been putting up at WGR550.com. What do you think is the biggest question, or what are the biggest questions when it comes to the linebacker group overall, in your opinion?
I think it's really the depth behind the two starters, because Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano really never come off the field.
Yeah.
And I'm not telling you the depth is bad. I'm saying I wonder who the depth is. I think it's A.J. Klein is the first guy in. That's what I think. But he can also play. He can play the strong side. So, you know, he can be a backup to any position. He can play three spots. That's fine. But I think after that is where I'm very intrigued. And again, I'm not telling you it's good. I'm not telling you it's bad. It can be. I think there's a lot of different ways in the spectrum it can go. The two guys I'm really interested in are Voshon Joseph and Terrell Dodson, because both of them are very young. They haven't played in the NFL. They showed some things at training camp and at preseason last year. Like, will they be able to come in and make an impact? But let's also remember the Bills play a lot of nickel defense. It's not like these guys are all going to be on the field that much. This is really more in case of injury to Milano or Edmonds. And I think A.J. Klein is probably the first guy in there. But I think those two guys, to me, Voshon Joseph and Terrell Dodson, are super intriguing because I think they both have a lot of upside, but we haven't really seen it. We don't know what they can do. And I'm not discounting Corey Thompson. The team likes Corey Thompson. He's been on the team the last 2 years. He was undrafted free agent, didn't make it in 2018, but then they put him on the practice squad. Then he ultimately played, and then he made the team last year. So, I mean, Corey Thompson is a guy I think you have to supplant. He's still ahead of them, to me, on the depth chart until someone proves they can pass him. But I'm not going to think that Voshon Joseph or Terrell Dodson can't do that based on simply the fact that, you know, these guys are now in the system for a year, although they didn't play. One was on IR, one was on the practice squad, and now they'll get a chance here to show what they can do.
What will A.J. Klein's role be on this defense?
That's a good question. You know, I don't think it's a one-for-one Lorenzo Alexander for A.J. Klein. Mm-hmm. No, they're different kinds of players. You know, A.J. is mostly an off-the-ball linebacker, you know, where Lorenzo, you could put on the ball, you could put off the ball. But at the same time, he could play all three positions. He can play the strong side. That's where Lorenzo basically was. And, you know, he's a guy that you can just kind of plug and play at any time you need. So I think his role is going to be really just the third linebacker in. But hey, in a certain situations, maybe we need an extra linebacker on the field. That's going to be A.J. Klein. The Bills don't play a lot of three linebacker sets. And again, it was different with Lorenzo because he would rush the passer as a third linebacker a lot of times, and you could move him around. I don't see A.J. Klein necessarily filling that role, but I do think he's going to be a big part of what they do as far as, getting on the field in certain packages or just kind of being there in case a guy, something happens in a game or he has to start for a week or two.
The article's up on the linebackers, and you'll find all the articles Sal has been writing at WGRF550.com. Hopefully you had a nice weekend, sir. Thanks for starting out the Monday work week with us. Appreciate your time, Mr. Capaccio.
No problem, guys. Talk to you tomorrow morning.
All right, Sal. Have a good day.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.